In 1835, a small newspaper, The Sun, suddenly became one of the most widely read newspapers of its time when it ran a six-part series that convinced its readers that Earth's moon was inhabited by unicorns, flying man-bats, and other fantastical creatures. Journalist and historian Matthew Goodman tells the story in his new book, The Sun and the Moon, the remarkable true account of hoaxers, showmen, dueling journalists, and lunar man-bats in 19th century New York. It's published by Basic Books, and it brings Matthew Goodman to the show today. Hello.
Hello.
There were also horned bears and these four-foot man-bats living on the moon. Who's responsible for this hoax?
Well, as you mentioned, it was published in The Sun in the summer of 1835. The man who wrote the hoax was a British journalist who was working as the editor of The Sun, a guy named Richard Adams Locke, a very erudite guy, who wrote a series of six articles that claimed that the great British astronomer John Herschel had discovered life on the moon. As you mentioned, unicorns and biped beavers, beavers that walked on their hind legs, and the crowning touch were these four-foot-tall man-bats, the Vespertilio Homo, Herschel is supposed to have called them.
Now, what was the Sun like in those days? Was it a respectable newspaper?
Not exactly. It was the first of the so-called penny papers in New York.
But later the New York Times came along in the 1850s, and it was a penny paper.
That's right. Well, the Sun... Before The Sun, the newspapers in New York, there were 11 daily papers in New York, and they were really for the elite of the city. They cost 6 cents, which was a lot of money at the time. And they were directed toward the merchants of the city. They had articles about commodity prices and ships launchings and so forth. The Sun was the first paper that was explicitly directed at the mass of people in the city, the working class of the people of the city.
So it would have been a tabloid if it had been
created
in the 20th century.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the types of articles it had were very different than the articles that were in the other papers. It had a lot of crime stories. They were the most popular part of the paper were the crime stories. But, you know, it covered scandal, it covered entertainment and sports and so forth, much like the tabloids of today.
Hadn't Richard Adams Locke been exiled to America from England?
Yes. Well, as I began to research the life of Locke, I became fascinated by it. Not much was known about Richard Adams Locke, but it turns out that he was a political radical back in England.
What does that mean?
Well, he had been part of the Republican movement in England, which was trying to democratize the English political system. He had been a champion of Catholic emancipation, which was a very controversial issue at the time. And his ideas were so radical, in fact, that he had been fired as an editor of a paper in the southwest of England.
But I would have thought then that he would have brought a certain political perspective here, even if he had learned his lesson about not going too far.
Well, he did. He did. I mean, while he was at The Sun, he was an ardent opponent of slavery, which made him almost unique among the daily papers of New York.
Because New York was more sympathetic to the South than other northern cities.
Absolutely. New York was probably the most southern sympathetic of all the northern cities. The Sun took a very progressive position on slavery. But I think Locke had learned his lesson and he had a wife and he had a small child and he was trying to keep his job. So he did a lot of stuff anonymously and sort of kept quiet as much as he possibly could.
Had he done hoaxes before?
No. No, this was his first hoax. He had had a lot of success a few months earlier with The Sun for a series of articles he did about a prophet called Matthias the Prophet, who was this guy named Robert Matthews, a carpenter, who had basically created a cult following for himself on the streets of New York.
But that was the real thing.
He was a real guy, and he had a harem up in upstate New York. He had seven women, one for each day of the week, six white women, one black woman. That woman, by the way, was a former slave named Isabella Van Wagenen, who ended up in later years changing her name, joining the abolitionist movement, and becoming known as Sojourner Truth. That's where we first discover her. But anyway, Matthias the Prophet was charged with poisoning one of his disciples, and he went on trial, and Locke covered the trial for The Sun. It became immensely popular, was put out, his articles were put out as a pamphlet, and Benjamin Day, the publisher of The Sun, said, hey, if you have any other ideas for pamphlets, let me know. And Locke came up with this idea.
But you say he thought of it as a satire. Why do people take it seriously?
Well, that's exactly right. That's what I found out. Richard Adams Locke was the author of arguably the most successful hoax in the history of newspaper journalism. I mean, people absolutely believed these articles. I mean, by the time this series had finished, The Sun, which was this two-year-old little paper, was the most widely read newspaper in the entire world.
Well, The War of the Worlds,
right.
Orson Welles' radio show, really duped an awful lot of people, but they did everything possible to warn the listeners.
Yes.
Was he doing anything here to warn his readers?
No, not really, no. What Locke, I've discovered, was trying to do was to satirize the religious astronomers of the day. Locke was someone who was a great believer in the liberatory power of science and was a religious free thinker. He was deeply opposed to any kind of religious control over science. And the religious astronomers of the day believed that all of the heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, all of the stars, they were all inhabited because God in his infinite wisdom would not create these worlds without also creating intelligent beings there to appreciate them. Well, Locke thought this was all nonsense. He thought it was absolutely dangerous to the minds of future scientists, and he decided he was going to satirize this idea in this series of articles. What he hadn't anticipated was that people had been so schooled in the ideas of these people that they absolutely believed it when they were published.
So he wrote them under the articles under the name Dr. Andrew Grant, and as you say, he talked about the work of Sir John Herschel, this British astronomer. Was there a Sir John Herschel?
Absolutely. He was.
So what did Herschel think when he heard that he was given credit for this sort of
Herschel
thing?
Herschel was conveniently located in South Africa at that time, which Locke, of course, knew, which meant that he was months and months away. This was the days, of course, before the telegram, and it was months getting the word to Herschel. But Herschel was a real scientist. He was probably the most famous scientist of his time, the son of William Herschel, a great astronomer in his own right, who had discovered Uranus. And at first he was amused when he heard the news of the discoveries that had been claimed in his name. But as time went on and he was getting letters from people all around the world, day after day after day, he was, I would say, less amused and, I would say, increasingly irate about it.
My guest is Matthew Goodman, whose writing has appeared in The Forward, The American Scholar, Harvard Review, Brill's Content, The Utney Reader. His latest book is The Sun and the Moon, The Remarkable True Account of Hoaxers, Showmen, Dueling Journalists, and Luna Manbats in 19th Century New York. It's published by Basic Books. So how do we wind up with dueling journalists here?
Well, the journalists in New York at that time were really a kind of a larger-than-life set. The newspapers of that time were really something of a one-man show. They were only four pages long. Only one of those pages was actually a news page. And the editor of the paper really did most of the writing. He wrote the articles. He selected the letters for publication. And a newspaper's fortunes rose and fell on the personality of the editor. So they were these very vain men, very egotistical, very arrogant, very ambitious, and intensely competitive. And they hated each other. And it was not at all uncommon for these guys to break out into fistfights when they happened to pass each other on Broadway. The editor of the Evening Post, the great poet William Cullen Bryant, actually horsewhipped a rival editor on Broadway right in front of the American Hotel, where the Woolworth Building is today. So they were constantly getting into fights with each other, and some of them actually fought duels with each other. So they were dueling journalists both metaphorically and quite literally.
Was the success of the series and the fact that The Sun became the most popular newspaper in the world, did that affect other newspapers' approach to their demographics?
I would say so. The success of The Sun meant a change in the newspaper business in America in general. The Sun was the first paper to use newsboys, for instance, to distribute their paper. Up to that point, newspapers had been sold almost entirely by subscription. The Moon series was so popular that The Sun's rivals began to publish it on their front pages as well, not wanting to miss out on the great uproar that had been created.
So were they inventing their own stories, or were they just simply picking up
They simply reprinted the articles from The Sun. And in fact, one of them claimed that they had gotten it from their own source as well in Scotland. But then you began to see the coverage of crime begin to appear in these papers and coverage of scandals and so forth. And you also began to see, importantly, you began to see the development of penny papers in other cities. So the Brooklyn Daily Eagle started, the Baltimore Sun started, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the New Orleans Time-Picayune, all papers that continue today. This was really the moment at which the penny paper became triumphant, and it was the moment really when America became a nation of newspaper readers for the first time.
Well, it is interesting that Locke also populated his fictitious moon with unicorns and Batman, the things that already had some kind of a mythological life on Earth. You would have thought
That's
he would
right.
have come up with stuff that was totally different. But was that because he wanted people to know that this was a hoax?
I mean, he put little clues in there. The very first thing that Herschel and his astronomers were said to have found was a field of poppies, which I think was Locke's little joke because the Confessions of an Opium Eater had just been published before that. So I think he was giving little hints about that.
And how was the hoax revealed finally?
What happened, you know, Locke himself, I think, was really caught in a bind because there was a tremendous amount of publicity about this and a lot of speculation about was it true, was it not true, and so forth. A lot of speculation focused on him because he was the editor of the paper that these articles were appearing in. But I don't think that he thought he was really able to reveal the hoax because he had been paid for it, and it was up to Benjamin Day, the publisher of the paper, to reveal the hoax. So one night he was out drinking. He was a bit of a drinker, and he was getting drunk with a colleague of his at another paper, the Journal of Commerce, who said, "Hey, we're about to start running the paper ourselves." And Locke, whose tongue I think had been loosened somewhat by drink, said to him, "Don't do it. I wrote it myself." And rather than take this as a kind of word to the wise from a friend of his, this guy Finn instead took it as a scoop and published an expose in the Journal of Commerce. Locke admits writing it, and that was how it came out.
And did it hurt Locke? Because you say Locke was a marvelous writer with a prodigious literary imagination. Others have compared him to Swift and Defoe. You
right.
would think that we would be reading Richard Adams Locke if he was that good.
Well, I wish that his name was better remembered today than it is. He really was a marvelous writer. The hoax series itself, the Moon series itself, is really a marvelous literary production. His editorials for The Sun are marvelous examples of the craft. But he became known, unfortunately, as a hoaxer. That was really what he became known as, and that was an idea that dogged him the rest of his life. He tried to start a paper of his own when he left The Sun called The New Era, a radical paper with a scientific bent. That only lasted a few years. He became the first editor of the Brooklyn Daily Eagle. That only lasted a year. That job eventually was taken, of course, by Walt Whitman. And he ended up the last 20 years of his working life out of journalism entirely at the Customs House in New York.
But he also found himself embroiled in some controversy thanks to Edgar Allan Poe.
Absolutely. Edgar Allan Poe is one of the major characters in this story, along with a young showman named P.T. Barnum. Poe,
another great hoaxer.
Absolutely. And his first hoax was the very same month, remarkably, as the Moon series. But Poe was a young short story writer then living in Richmond, Virginia, who just 2 months earlier had written a story called Hans Fall, a Tale, that imagined a balloon trip to the moon full of all kinds of scientific detail. Now, Poe, of course, was immensely vain, intensely competitive, and was convinced that The Sun had plagiarized his idea for their series. And in fact, he had based his series on his reading of none other than John Herschel. So he was irate at the success that The Sun had with their series compared to the obscurity of his own story, spent years railing against The Sun series. And 9 years later, when he first moved to New York, his very first order of business was to go to the Sun offices on Nassau Street and plant his own hoax in the pages of the Sun to finally prove his superiority as a hoaxer once and for all.
Well, he is remembered a lot more than Richard Adams Locke. We mentioned Barnum's hoax. He claimed that he had a woman who was 161 years old.
That's right. Yeah, her name was Joyce Heth.
Boy, we had a gullible public, didn't we?
People loved hoaxes back then. This was the age of hoaxes. It was really part of the whole democratizing trends that were going on in the society at the time. But yes, he claimed that this elderly black woman named Joyce Heth was 161 years old, and not only that, that she was the former nursemaid of the infant George Washington. And people believed that, and they swarmed to see her. And those two hoaxes were really the two greatest hoaxes of the time.
And what was Poe's hoax?
Poe's hoax was the balloon hoax, the so-called balloon hoax, that the aeronaut Monck Mason had traveled around the world in a balloon.
Do you think that this is an early version of what we later had with the National Enquirer?
To some extent. I think that The Sun was a far more serious paper than the National
Enquirer.
And
it lasted into the World Telegram and Sun.
Absolutely.
Into the 60s.
Absolutely. It became the Evening Sun, of course, in the 20th century, but it did last until the mid-1960s. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. That, of course, was in the New York Sun. The Sun was a working-class paper. It was a progressive paper. It was very strong on labor issues. It had great local coverage. And I think it had a lot going for it. It had a lot of positive attributes that I think are not necessarily shared by some of the papers today, like the National Enquirer.
Although it is remembered probably more for Yes, Virginia, There is a Santa Claus
That's
than
right.
anything else.
And that's right.
This hoax is something that has become relatively obscure, of course, now very well known because of your book. Matthew Goodman will be giving a talk and signing books tonight at 7 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble store in Tribeca. That's on Warren Street. Then again on December 2nd in Brooklyn. You can get all the details on our show page at WNYC.org. The book, The Sun and the Moon, the remarkable true account of hoaxers, showmen, dueling journalists, and lunar man-bats in 19th century New York, is published by Basic Books. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.